Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
Greetings and welcome once again to The Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert, hosting the show solo tonight because my partner, my best friend, my wife Sharon, is feeling a little under the weather. She was a bit warm to the touch earlier, which is ironic because our topic tonight is influenza. Specifically, we want to talk about the modified form of the Spanish flu virus called WSN-33. And as we record this on Friday, May 6, 2005, we have with us an expert in emerging diseases, the founder and president of Recombinomics Incorporated, and the man who first sounded the alarm about WSN-33, Dr. Henry Nyman.
It's a pleasure to be here, Derek.
Well, I understand the World Health Organization got together in Manila the last couple of days, and they had some pretty pressing matters on their schedule. What exactly did they talk about while they got together?
They got together on the 5th of May on Thursday, and initially they were looking at really what to do and how to control the H5N1 that's emerging in Vietnam, Thailand, and Cambodia. And so it was pretty much focused on that particular virus. But they had sent a representative to South Korea to get more information on this WSN-33, which is a human cell line that showed up in pigs in Korea. And it's been an issue since it was originally published back in, well, it came out in October, but it was publicly available in December. And it's been an issue whether those sequences are just a gene bank of sequences or whether they really represent a virus that's in the swine. And so they sent a representative to South Korea to actually see data generated right before their eyes. And the data generated before their eyes showed that WSN-33 was in the swine. And that representative flew back to Manila on Thursday night, actually. And so he should have notified WHO on Friday, and then there were some other representatives from around the world that were there, and at least one of them has seen the data, and he should have notified them also. So WHO should know at this stage that the WSN-33 sequences that have been at issue for the last 6 months or so are real, and they do represent viruses in Korean pigs, actually.
Okay.
In dead Korean pigs.
Now, we've been talking about this and noting it on our website for a while, but for people who aren't up to speed on what WSN-33 is, why is it a big deal that WSN-33 is present in the pigs in Korea?
Well, actually, it really touches on a lot of different areas, but just the most basic one. WSN-33, the reason it's called WSN-33 is it's really a derivative of the first human virus ever isolated. The paper was written by Wilson Smith, which is why it's WS.
Okay.
And it's 33 because he wrote the paper in 1933. So this virus was isolated actually from one of his associates who sneezed on a ferret that they had in the lab, and the ferret got the flu, and they ended up isolating the virus from the ferret. I mean, they were actually doing distemper experiments, and they had the ferrets in the lab. And so, in any event, the virus was originally discovered in 1933, and so that in and of itself would be a cause for concern, simply because it's a human virus. It's H1N1. It's the same serotype as the virus that caused the flu pandemic in 1918. And it was isolated in 1933. And so the virus has changed quite a bit since 1933. And so most people born after 1933 wouldn't have immunity to this particular virus. But WSN-33 is actually a larger concern than just WS-33, which is what the original virus was, because there was interest in studying neurotropic viruses, because in the 1918 pandemic, there were a number of cases that had a neurological component. And in 1940, this WS33 was used to infect mice, and it actually caused a lethal infection in mice. And WSN33 was isolated from the brains of mice, and the N stands for neurotropic. So it's Wilson-Smith neurotropic from 1933.
Okay, now the 1940 variant, I'm just curious. Now, I understand this was in England that the...
Correct.
Okay. Bioweapons research for the war against Hitler, or...?
No, I think that this was simply to look at... what happened in the pandemic? I mean, this was a virus that was somewhat related. 1933, it wasn't a pandemic, but it was a fairly widespread flu season. And this was really to get a better idea on how an influenza virus could cause neurotropic problems.
And okay.
So it was an experiment to isolate a virus that was able to grow in neurological tissues.
Like brain tissue, for example.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And then, as it turns out, the virus became very popular. And the reason it became popular, it was able to grow in tissue culture. Most flu viruses, which is one of the problems with actually making the vaccine, don't really grow that well in tissue culture, and they end up having to grow them in eggs. And tissue culture, especially today, is something that's done, you know, in most labs around the world, and is very easy for the researcher, because they basically can grow the cells in an incubator. They can stick them in the freezer, take them out again when they need them. They're a known source, and the virus will grow in those cells. But one of the concerns is the reason it can grow in those cells is it's got a mutation, and the mutation allows it to sequester a protease called plasminogen. And the reason it's called plasminogen is it's in plasma.
In blood.
So it's basically everywhere. And for a virus, a flu virus, to get into a cell, it actually has to take its H molecule, its hemagglutinin molecule, and cleave it. And the virus has devised a number of ways to do this efficiently. And WSN33 has managed to do it by simply sequestering plasminogen and having that get activated and cleave it to get into the cell. So it's fairly easy for that virus to get into a variety of cells, which is probably the reason it was found in the mouse brain. And it, as it turns out, it's got a number of other characteristics that make it a virus of concern. It like the H5N1, it also is antiviral drug resistant.
Oh, drug resistant.
That makes it resistant to both amantadine and ramantadine. And then there's another mutation in another gene that's associated with virulence, and it has that other mutation. And so it basically is, kind of a virus that you definitely wouldn't want roaming up. In farms in Korea.
Sure. So the thing that makes it so useful to laboratory research is exactly what makes it so dangerous out in the wild.
Correct.
So its natural habitat right now is a laboratory.
That's correct. And so that's one of the other issues that is basically unanswered. You know, up until this week, the most basic question, which was, does it exist, was first and foremost, and now that it's been pretty much proven that it does exist, the next question is how did it get into the pigs? Because
right.
it's a lab virus. It's very popular. A lot of labs in the country, or not the country, in the world, have this virus, and actually that was one of the issues that drew my attention to it, because I had looked at the database Gene Bank when it was first available in December of last year.
Okay, now Gene Bank is what exactly?
Gene Bank is a repository for genetic sequences. So the virus itself isn't a gene bank, just the genetic code for its genes is deposited there. And researchers put sequences on deposit, because most refereed journals require that when an article is published, that there's enough detail in the article that anybody else can repeat that experiment and verify it. And experiments that involve genetic sequences basically can't be repeated without knowing what those sequences are. So it's a repository of not just viruses, but bacteria, human sequences. It essentially has sequences on thousands of organisms from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also searchable. And so there's software that's also publicly available. And you really only need to copy and paste the sequence and paste it into a box and hit go. And essentially, it'll go into that very large database and show you what is most closely related to it, and basically what the sequence matches most closely. And it'll list the sequences, and you can see the differences. And it's very easy. Literally within 5 seconds, you can take a sequence and find out what it's most closely related to. And that was one of the things that I had done in December, because I was really looking for new sequences at GeneBank that showed evidence of recombination, because I was putting together a manuscript that really focused on recombination and influenza. And I took the sequences that came from the Korean pigs and did the search. And right at the top of the list was WSN33. And it was kind of, well, these are 2004 pigs, and this is a 1933 virus, and they're virtually identical. They weren't identical. There were small differences. But WSN33 was certainly by far the most closely related sequence. And all these little mutations that I had mentioned, with missing a glycosylation site, and there's actually a deletion in the neuraminidase gene, and they have this one change in PB2. All of those changes were in the pig sequences.
So I understand correctly, the reason that the WSN33 sequences were discovered in the Korean pigs was because you were working on a manuscript about how viruses recombine their genetic codes.
Correct.
And had you not been doing that at that particular moment, this might have just slipped into the public database unnoticed.
Well, it probably would have come out, because I mean that's one of the interesting explanations for WHO. There were quite a few reporters that were interested in this story, and I had basically told them about the sequences, and they couldn't really get a whole lot of information out of WHO. And one of the explanations was that, maybe these sequences were just accidentally loaded there because somebody grabbed the wrong file.
Okay.
And it was the reason that story was just ludicrous is because these were 6 different sequences, and each virus has 8 genes. So this was sequences of 48 genes, and of those 48 genes, 30 of them were from WSN33, and the remainder were from actually a Korean avian, an H9N2 virus. And so for somebody to accidentally come up with 30 WSN genes and accidentally send those, it would be quite a feat.
You don't have to be a statistician to figure that's pretty small odds.
Right. And then the other point was that it didn't exactly match WSN33. They were all over 99% homologous, but they weren't exact matches. And they weren't exact matches with each other. They were all over 99% homologous to each other, but they had a change here and a change there. And so it wasn't like somebody took one sequence and put it up there 8 different times with a different name from a different virus, or 6 different times. It was they were all slightly different.
So those are the types of changes you would expect if the virus were out in the wild for a little while, right?
Yes, and that was one of the issues. I mean, when I saw the sequence, there were 2 reasons I was interested in getting more information. One was the example of recombination. The full sequence wasn't submitted. It was really like half of the gene, and the very end of the gene showed that it was from WSM33, and the rest of the gene was from these H9N2 sequences. And so this was actually the first example that I had found, and probably that exists. It showed recombination between a human and an avian gene. So I was particularly interested to find out what the missing sequence was, the region that was not at gene bank yet, to see if the human portion went all the way to the beginning of the gene, or it was just a little piece of it. And so I contacted the researcher, Sang Seo, from mm-hmm. South Korea, to try to get some information. And he had actually just submitted the manuscript to Science. And so he really didn't want to talk a lot about what was not there and about the manuscript in general, because it had not been accepted for publication. And,
okay.
And that's pretty common, that scientists don't like to talk about their manuscript before publication.
Well, neither do authors.
And they like to talk about it a lot once it's been accepted. But until it's accepted, it's something that they'd say, you know, it's under, you know, it's at the reviewers and you can't really comment. So he wasn't that forthcoming initially. But the other issue was the public health issue. And when I saw the sequences, it was a concern because two of the sequences were H1N1. So in that case, just to back up a step, each one of these six isolates had both evidence of recombination and reassortment. So for recombination, it had part of one of the viruses and part of another virus of the same gene, like the one I was talking about, this PB2 that I wanted to get the rest of the information on. And then the other is like shuffling a cards in a deck, that essentially the virus has eight genes, but they're subgenomic, so they're made as eight pieces of RNA.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the same cell infected with both the human and the avian, that the virus that comes out can have a mixture, and that's what all of these had. They all had WSM33 sequences, but of these six that were at gene bank, none of them had all eight genes from WSM33. They ranged from anywhere from three to seven genes from WSM33. But two of them that had the seven, so seven out of eight genes were WSM33, had the H and the N from WSM33. So they were H1N1. And that pretty much determines what types of cells it can affect. And H1N1 is a human sequence, and therefore they would be fully transmissible to humans. So the concern was that you had essentially almost a complete WSM33 genome, and it could be at least two of the six could be transmitted to humans. And when I saw it, I thought that, well, maybe this is an experiment. And because the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, had actually planned a similar experiment. They were going to take H5N1, which is an avian, and they were going to swap genes with a human virus to see if different combinations were more virulent and what they should be looking for as far as an emerging pandemic was concerned. And I thought, well, maybe South Korea already did that experiment, and they did it with WSN33 and H9N2. WSN33 was the human, H9N2 was the avian. But then I thought about it, and it really didn't make a lot of sense, because, you know, to answer that question, you could answer that by using a contemporary human virus. So you could take, you know, the same virus that you get vaccinated against the circulating. So if it did escape, it really wouldn't be
pose a danger
a whole lot different than the normal flu. And it was kind of like, well, who would use WSN33 for that type of experiment? But, you know, I wanted to get a clarification as to whether this was, you know, some type of controlled experiment where, you know, the pigs were quarantined and they were destroyed after they were infected or something along those lines. And I found out that they were just which I suspected because of the numbers. They were all S numbers, and they went from, you know, 1 to 452, and it was kind of like, looks like these guys were just a bunch of samples that were taken from farms. And indeed, that's what they were. So when I found out that they were on farms and they contained WSM33 genes and as many as seven of them, I did contact the World Health Organization and said that, you know, this looks like it's a problem here. And, you know, as far as I can tell, it's on these farms, and it's six pigs. And my understanding is not just six pigs from a farm, it's six pigs from six farms. And so it's already fairly widespread. And so the first question WHO had was, well, you know, what are the health concerns? And I kind of, you know, I thought it was pretty obvious, but I basically, you know, told them what I just told you as far as, you know, the background, WSN-33. And then the question came up as whether it was contamination. And that was a natural question because WSN-33 is a lab virus.
And present in a lot of labs around the world.
Right, right. Okay. So the question was, you know, is this really in the pigs or is this just in the South Korean lab? And they brought the samples in and somehow the sequences got from, you know, a culture in the lab into the sample, and then you got these sequences that were showing up that, you know, were there as far as sequencing was concerned. But
and that's right, and that's not unheard of happening because that's how the mistaken shipment of H2N2,
correct?
And, right, the H2N2 was sent out, as I understand it. There was
exactly, and the same thing happened with SARS. With SARS, I don't know if you remember, with this whole issue of the British Columbia nursing homes over the summer and the national labs there contaminated samples with SARS sequences, and it looked like SARS was reemerging, and it was a very big deal. And so it's not uncommon for there to be contamination.
So a reasonable question from WHO then to ask whether the lab in South Korea had contaminated the sample with the WSN-33. Okay.
Correct. And so that was addressed a couple different ways. One, I did what you had said, which was to look at the differences between the six different isolates. And literally, there's 30 different human genes that were there, 30 different sequences, and looked at the differences. And the virus, you know, I've been studying the viruses fairly carefully on how they emerge and what kind of rules they follow. And these were following all the rules. And so the changes were natural. They weren't some type of sequencing error. So each of these sequences really was slightly different than each other. And each was slightly different than WSN-33. And they followed the right types of natural evolution rules to show those differences. And that stood out as a difference from, you know, the example I gave in British Columbia. In British Columbia, the positive control contaminated all the samples, so all the samples had the exact same sequence, and they all were an exact match with the positive control. In this case, they were all different, and they weren't just due to some type of error in the sequencing because they were kind of natural evolution. So I wrote up a fairly detailed report to WHO and told them why they really look real to me just because of these types of differences. And then I asked Sang Seo, you know, well, what are the chances? Because, as it turned out, the paper from Science came back, and they say, well, we need an independent confirmation that these aren't contaminants. And so the whole point of his paper was really dependent upon showing that these were real differences and weren't, you know, some type of contamination in the lab. So he was interested in getting the issue resolved and confirmed. And so he wasn't surprised when I came back and asked him, well, what are the chances these are contaminants? And he said that, you know, it was essentially zero because he didn't have WSN-33 in the lab. And on top of that, the viruses weren't isolated in cell lines, which they are sometimes. They were actually isolated in chicken eggs. So he says that, you know, he took the samples and they never saw a cell line, and he isolated from chicken eggs. And he's got other sequences from birds that he's isolated. And, you know, the WSN-33 were just in these six swine sequences. He actually had a seventh sequence that was deposited that was all avian. And so he said that he didn't see how it could possibly be due to contamination. And then, as it turns out, one of WHO's consultants had said, well, he sent WSN-33 to the lab in South Korea. So he had it. And so then that came up, and Sang Seo said that, no, there was some confusion there, that he had gotten a human virus from that lab, but it wasn't WSN-33. It was a sequence, a virus called PR8, which is another lab virus was actually used in vaccine work. And he said that, you know, he got PRA, but he never got WSN-33. So that's kind of where things stood in December.
And so it appeared that that the World Health Organization was trying to explain the presence of the WSN-33 at GeneBank as a contamination error at the lab in Korea. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And you know, most scientists that just didn't look at the data very carefully and just heard, oh, you know, he's got WSN-33 sequences in his isolates, you know, the first thing they say, oh, you know, something happened. It just got contaminated, and I can't believe, you know, why would WSN-33 be in pigs in Korea?
Sure.
So WHO kind of went with that, and then there were attempts to confirm it, and I don't really, I mean, I could give you theories as to why the attempts were unsuccessful, but the bottom line is that the other labs couldn't really prove or disprove. They you know, some parts of the data they could prove, which were the non-interesting parts, mm-hmm. and the WSN-33 parts, you know, they said they couldn't find them. And you know, to me, it was kind of like, well, how hard are they really looking? And you know, negative data is not the most reliable type of data that you want to hang your hat on. And so, you know, I had said that I still don't see anything that's saying these sequences aren't real. I mean, it's speculation that something happened in the lab, but he says the virus was, you know, the WSN-33 wasn't even there. And there's nothing, I said, you know, at a minimum, you need a full H9N2. I mean, if he contaminated H9N2 with WSN-33, you should be able to come up with an H9N2 that's got 8 avian genes. And WHO couldn't come up with that. And so it kind of went around and went around. And then it got out in the public domain to a degree. The Nature and Science both wrote up stories kind of early on when WHO said that, you know, they didn't think it was real. And then there was another series of experiments fairly recently where a third virus was called. It was an H1N2 virus. And actually the H1N2 virus has some significance because it is a virus that had been described in Korea in the past. And it's an unusual combination, H1N2, and it turns out that it's got some human genes, it's got some swine genes, and it's got some avian genes. So it's a funny constellation. Mm-hmm. But remarkably, the sequence that was originally found in 2002 in Korea and then found more recently in 2005 by a WHO consultant was that it was exactly the same as sequences found in the United States. And it turns out South Korea imports pigs from the United States. So the H1N2 that was there in Korean pigs almost certainly came from United States pigs, where that particular infection was noted back in 2001.
The plot thickens.
So the plot is thickening. And so that's where things stood. And the WHO actually came out with a press release. And they were essentially going to say that case closed. They went and they looked on this farm. They looked on a couple farms. They found a bunch of viruses. They were all H1N2. They couldn't find it as far as they're concerned. It's a lab artifact. And you know, I was asked to comment on that by Science and Nature. And, you know, I said, well, you know, the fact they found H1N2 doesn't mean there's no WSN-33. It just means they found another virus. You know, and they only looked on two farms. And so I kind of responded to this press release. Now, right about the time the press release was going to come out, the H2N2 story broke, and you know it elicited a pretty strong reaction in the press as far as, you know, how can this H2N2 be circulating? It's a pandemic strain. Everybody, you know, that's born after 1957 or 1968 is when H2N2 kind of was replaced by H3N2. You know, these people would all be potential
vulnerable
susceptible
to it, sure.
Because they didn't have antibody, and it was kind of like, well, you know, H2N2 is a walk in the park compared to WSN33.
Right, right. Everyone younger than my dad would be
right. And the H2N2 was, even though it was a pandemic, it was mostly elderly people in 1957. You know, most of those people aren't even alive anymore. And so how bad it would be for people is kind of up in the air, but the main reason it wasn't as big a deal is it went to pathologists that basically paid $600 to get these kits, and you know, they were going to do it in a hood and be careful, and they weren't going to be spreading this virus that likely, I mean, some might have, you know, actually had a problem. It was not a smart thing to do, and you know, so it was retrievable. But you know, they all had FedEx numbers, and somebody had a sign for it.
Right. So you could trace the
$600, so they didn't just send it out as a freebie mailer to anybody in the world. I mean, basically, they knew these people, you know, were receiving it, and so it took a couple of weeks, I guess, to get it back, but they got it back. Whereas WSN-33, I mean, these are on pigs on farms.
Right.
The WHA can't even detect. So it was a different level, really, of a problem. And the press release is kind of like the sequences. I can't get a straight answer as to whether it was ever released or not. You know, I saw a draft of it, and whether that release ever, you know, was distributed or not isn't clear, but it was basically to close the book on the story. But the book really kind of opened wide by the researcher Sang Seo in South Korea, because he knew the sequences were real, and he wasn't sure why WHO consultants couldn't confirm it. But he decided that, you know, he was going to pursue this and confirm it himself. And
well, and I suspect there's some professional pride at issue too. He's
well,
not
yeah,
take
this
fall
manuscript
for...
is kind of sitting there, and everybody's saying, you know, you got a bunch of contamination, and
sure,
and none of this is real. So, yeah, I mean, he certainly wanted to set the record straight and show that the sequences he submitted, because I mean, they're still there. They got his name on it. I mean, even if the manuscript still hasn't been published, the source of the information is clearly there. And he didn't want to talk to Nature Science a whole lot, because it was, you know, he just wanted to generate some more data. And so there were actually pigs that were dying now in 2005. The 2004 had respiratory disease, but they were alive. Then he got samples from pigs who had actually died. And he went ahead and isolated more WSN-33 sequences. And he did it. So far, most of the data is just the H, but you know, the first set there were six isolates, but only two of them were H1N1. Now he's actually come up with nine more isolates that are H1.
And just to recap again, the H1N1 is the type of virus that WSN33 is.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
And so he's not only shown as H1, but he's shown that it's, again, greater than 99% homologous, but is actually evolving. So it makes it a much harder argument to make that this is some type of contamination, because the 2005 sequences are slightly different than the 2004 sequences, which are slightly different than WSN-33, and 2005 is drifted further away from the original sequence.
Which was what you'd expect with a virus circulating in the wild, and not something that was accidentally dropped or mixed in a laboratory.
That's right. And they actually fall into two separate groups. I mean, they're pretty one-sided. There's one that's kind of all by itself, and there's eight others that are more like each other. And so, you know, to come up with a mechanism that you could do nine different contaminations that were different than the contaminations that were done in December, knowing that contamination was a major issue, mm-hmm. you know, and to generate nine more sequences, and it was just you know, extremely hard to believe. And so he did let other scientists know this. I have seen the sequences, and he let scientists They're very well known. Take a look at the data. And they came to the same conclusion. I mean, I think if you look at the data, it's hard to come up with an explanation. And you know, the argument is that, you know, positive data wins out over negative data. And, you know, if one group says it's positive and here's the WSN33 sequence, and the other one says I can't find it, you kind of believe the one that's got the WSN33 sequences. But on top of that, WHO sent a representative to the lab in South Korea because it was one of these issues that wouldn't go away, and the fact that he notified WHO and said, you know, I've got 9 more sequences here. You know, this isn't an artifact. These are real sequences. So WHO did send a representative to his lab, and he repeated the experiments right in front of him. And he did take pictures of the results, and he did fly to Manila with him. So yeah, it seems to me that the story is going to come out, and that WHO is going to have to acknowledge that these are really in pigs in Korea. And my understanding is that Korea has to admit it first. So WHO can't go to Korea and say, you've got these WSN sequences. Korea has to say, oh, we found these WSN 33 sequences, and, you know, we need your assistance trying to figure out what to do about them. But it's been high enough profile that it's hard to imagine how it's not going to actually come out. So I think the story will come out in the next week or two, and that Korea is going to acknowledge that it's a problem that these pigs are dying, and there's WSN33, and then it starts a whole new set of questions. You know, how did it get into the pigs?
Well, that's
why couldn't WHO get an answer for 6 months?
Sure,
it's just, I mean, the potential. You can't even answer the question: is this bioterrorism? Because the sequence, the virus is fairly, you know, available. It's not like something that, you know, how could a terrorist ever come up with this isolate? I mean, the virus has been around since 1933, you know.
Sure.
And all of these questions are essentially unanswered at this time.
We're talking with Dr. Henry Nyman of Recombinomics Incorporated in Pittsburgh, an expert in emerging diseases and in the recombination and reassortment of genetic material in viruses, and specifically about the WSN33 virus in Korea. Now, you mentioned the World Health Organization and some of the implications now, you know, as to what happens next in Korea, if and when they admit that there is a problem with WSN33, which, as you pointed out, is a virus that is very well suited for living inside inside organisms, pretty deadly, as I understand it, at least in laboratory conditions. Is the World Health Organization well suited to this type of detection of a bioterror event?
Well, no. I mean, that's what the problem is. And part of this came to light because Lori Garrett had written an article in a organization called Council on Foreign Relations. And at the time, she thought that it wasn't real because she had read about the controversy and had gone to WHO, and WHO said, well, you know, it's true the sequences were a gene bank, but the sequences weren't in pigs. And so she brought it up as to how ill-suited the world was actually to even detect.
Right. The title of her article was Scary Near Miss.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so she kind of detailed why it would have been a real problem if it was real, but, you know, not to worry. This wasn't a real event, but it could have been. And brought up the fact that it did take a long time for it to be discovered, and then it became an issue of whether it really existed. And then it became an issue of, you know, WHO is not really, you know, that's not its mandate to look at this, and they would be told, and they still are. I mean, they're still dependent upon South Korea saying this is a problem. They can't turn around and say to South Korea, you've got a problem. And so it's not something that can be seen easily. And, I mean, one of the questions is where did it originate, and the fact that the H1N2 in South Korea apparently originated in the United States the question is, you know, is there WSN-33 in the United States right now? And the answer is, I think most people don't know because nobody's really looked. And it's and especially if there's a dual infection. And that seems to be the case in Korea because the latest data, it looks like there's it's not just all reassorted and recombined. Some of these animals really have two complete viruses, or at least they've got an H1 and they've got an H9. So there's, you know, where they've got pieces of the other gene, you need the full viruses isolated, and that's in progress right now. But they seem to be dually infected, and some of them look like they're triply infected. So they've got H1N1, they got H1N2, and they got H9N2. And that's the other component. The H9N2 definitely is Korean. So, I mean, you can look at the sequences and pretty much tell where the sequences originated. So the H9N2 is from Korea, and it's not only from Korea, it's recent. So the H9N2 probably happened last year at the earliest. But the H1N2 is, it matches, you know, 2001 sequences from the United States.
So this may have been in Korea for several years.
Yes. I mean, it's possible that it didn't have the H9N2 component, and it just had WSN-33 and H1N2, and those could have come from the United States. I mean, H1N2 definitely came from the United States, and it's been known to be in the United States since 2001. And so it's conceivable that the same pigs that went over there with H1N2 also had WSN-33 in them, and nobody has really found that until now. And one example of why that's plausible is that the WHO consultant that looked at these pigs said they've got H1N2. You know, he couldn't find the WSN-33, but I'm not sure how hard he looked for it. So so the point is, if you're not looking for the WSN-33 and you do find the H1N2, I mean, you can do a general test, say, oh, this pig's infected with influenza A. And then you say, well, I wonder what influenza A it is. Let me take a look. Oh, it's H1N2. That's what the problem is. But if he's got both viruses, he's got H1N2 and WSN-33, if they're not looking for the WSN-33, it could be sitting there unnoticed. So that can't be excluded. I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm not saying that WSN-33 happened in the United States and it got shipped over there. It could very well have happened in Korea. But Sang-seo insists that nobody in Korea has WSN-33. So, you know, I don't know. He says he doesn't and nobody in his institute has it. And so it's a question of, you know, where did the WSN-33 come from? And the presence of the H9N2 doesn't necessarily mean that both of those viruses arrived at the same time.
Okay.
And in fact, there'd be a good argument that they didn't arrive at the same time unless the H9N2 brought it in. But now that he's got complete sequences, or at least H1 and H9 in the same animal, then that would argue that it wasn't all, you know, all the WSN-33 that arrived came via an H9N2 dual infection, because it would seem likely that he's going to have possibly all eight genes of WSN-33 in some of these isolates.
So it sounds like some real detective work needs to be done, and the longer the WSN-33 floats around in the pigs in the wild, the more it changes and the more difficult it becomes to trace it back to its source. Am I right?
Well, you know, fortunately, the sequences are at GeneBank, and they're not changing. So, you know, at least you know what it looked like last year, and so you've got a reference for it. And so, the you know, one of the questions is that it can change in various labs. So, if WHO went and did a fairly extensive survey of WSN-33 sequences in various labs around the world, they might be able to trace where the WSN-33 came from. And I mean, one of the obvious experiments is to just look at those pigs in Illinois and say, are there WSN-33 sequences there? I mean, if they're there, then that backs it up all the way to the United States. You know, if they're not, then it says it happened, you know, somewhere after, assuming that the pigs were imported from the U.S. But the H1N2, I think, is fairly clear-cut. And WHO even says in their press release, or their non-press release, but their statement that they made at one time, that the H1N2 they found in Korea did match the U.S. versions. And so at least one virus that's in Korea looks like it did come from the United States.
How much manpower does the World Health Organization have to follow up things like this?
Well, I mean, I've just been surprised it's taken this long. I mean, the WHO did complain in this release that, they put a lot of energy into trying to prove this, and they call it speculation. But there is an issue of manpower because, they had this meeting in Manila. It wasn't called for WSM-33. It was called for H5N1 because H5N1 is clearly a problem. I mean, it's straining resources at WHO, and this episode with WSM-33 kind of points to its reliance on the host countries to basically be forthcoming with the information. And, that's an issue, I think, in all of these avian flu outbreaks as to how much information is really released and how much information is not even generated and how much information is just held. There really isn't a mechanism to kind of monitor this. I mean, conceivably, the United States was attacked in 2001 that's what the crop dusters were for. They were basically to drop some WSM-33 on some pigs in Illinois, and nobody noticed until, 2005. But that's an issue, is that there isn't good monitoring, and there's not even a good mechanism, because animal quarantine is really the agency that's responsible for monitoring the health of the animals, and it wasn't like they were starting from scratch. They were actually given samples from Sangseo's lab, and from what I heard, it sounded like the samples got contaminated in their lab, and they came up with a totally different sequence, to tell you the truth. So it's like the agencies that are supposed to be covering this just do a so-so job. And as far as investigating it, it should have gone a lot quicker than it did. And I think that it will go quicker now. But I think that was part of the issue, was to kind of get over this, is it real or not? And frankly, I mean, WHO and Korea both would be a lot happier if it wasn't. It's
sure.
A lot easier to deal with if it was a gene bank than it was in pigs on farms.
And maybe by, delaying, they hoped that it would just sort of go away on its own.
Well, that's an issue in general. I think a lot of these disease outbreaks are approached as in who's dying. That if it's an issue and people aren't dying and it's something that kind of comes up, some of these might just get resolved and go away. And, it turns out the pigs are dying now in Korea. And so it's at the level where, what's killing the pigs? And just finding H9N2 usually doesn't kill. I mean, that's a real common avian virus, but it rarely causes fatal disease. And the H1N2 isn't necessarily killing. I mean, the H1N2 is a contemporary. The H1 is from like 1990 human virus, so it's not that big a problem with either humans or pigs. But it's this the WSM-33. It's a problem probably both for the pigs and for the humans. And there was one, I'd mentioned that 627 and the PB2. None of the isolates from 2004 actually have that particular portion. That half of the PB2 gene was actually avian in all six of them. There were only two isolates that had human sequences in PB2, but they had it at the front half of the molecule, and the 627s at the back half, so they had an avian half. So all the swine that were sick didn't have this one change, and the answer to these 2005 is still not known yet. So the 627 is a lethal factor. It's something that is associated with more lethal versions. And interestingly enough, 627 is in some of the H1N1 isolates also. And so it's a change that's fairly important. But that might be the difference between the 2004 pigs that had respiratory disease and the 2005 pigs that have died.
And then the big question, of course, Dr. Nyman, is how dangerous is this to humans? What's the risk of this spreading from the pigs in Korea to people and then spreading from human to human?
Right. Well, you know, there hasn't been an announcement of this, you know, major outbreak of H1N1 in Korea. So it's not clear that it's happened yet. I mean, it is a human virus. It's fully transmissible in humans. And, you know, it doesn't really need any additional genetic modification. So it's kind of, you know, farmers in front of the pig when it sneezes, you know, just like the ferret got infected with WSN-33, a person could get infected. And, you know, the chances are there's quite a bit of difference. I mean, I looked at the difference at the amino acid level, which is the protein and how the immune system would recognize these. And the difference between the WSN-33 sequence and the current H1N1 that's being used to vaccinate people, which was isolated in 1999, there's 60 amino acid differences in the H molecule and 45 in the N molecule. And both of those are big numbers. I mean, the difference between the Fujian strain and the Panama strain in the United States, so the vaccine didn't work very well. Those differences at the amino acid level are you know, generally single digit. So to have 8 differences and have 60 differences, there's a big difference there.
So the odds of a flu vaccine working to prevent someone catching WSN-33 if it starts to spread are pretty slim.
Yeah, and unless WSN-33 is actually used in a vaccine. But yeah, the New Caledonia H1N1, which is what's in the current vaccine, would not offer much protection at all.
Mm. Well, Dr. Henry Nyman, we appreciate your time tonight and kind of running down the sequence of events for this spread of this virus through Korea and the World Health Organization's response or non-response, as the case may be. And we'll certainly keep tabs with you as the weeks progress. And, of course, we recommend that people log onto your website, recombinomics.com, for your commentary and analysis of the information as it becomes available.
Well, it's a pleasure talking tonight and getting the word out, and I think it's very useful to have these tapes available online for anybody to access.
Well, that's why we do it, and again, we appreciate your time in helping us to do it. Dr. Henry Nyman, thanks again.
Okay, thank you, Derek, and I hope Sharon feels better.
Thank you.
So in a nutshell, here's the situation as of the first weekend in May 2005. The human influenza virus WSN-33 has been taken from a laboratory and inserted into pigs in South Korea, where it is spreading and killing animals. How it got from the lab and into the wild is an open question. Accident? Bioweapons test? A terror event? We just don't know. Because this virus has never been in circulation in the wild, humans do not have any immunity to it. And this may be an especially dangerous strain of virus because of the neurotropic component described by Dr. Nyman, meaning that it attacks the nerve tissue in the body, the central nervous system. Now, so far, the World Health Organization hasn't responded except to issue press releases or non-releases, according to Dr. Nyman, blaming the lab for contaminating the samples. That may change next week when the South Korean government gets involved and formally requests help from the World Health Organization. So we'll keep you posted. Our thanks again to Dr. Henry Nyman for being our guest tonight. You can read his analysis of the WSN-33 situation and the ongoing bird flu outbreak in Southeast Asia at his website, recombinomics.com. Click on the What's New section for his updates and latest commentary. Remember always, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. A new day.
news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.